Shemos chapter 17. So this chapter is a lot shorter than yesterday's chapter. It will take us faster to go through it. And it's basically two stories. The story of the water in Refidim, also known as the story of Masu Umerivu, which of course has a corresponding story in Bajas Chukas and Sefer Bamidbar called the Memerivu, which seems to be the same story or a similar story. And the second part is the story of the war in Melchemes Amalek. Now, to put both of these things in context, as we've discussed, the context here is this short Sefer Bamidbar sequence within the Sefer Shemois. So the Bamidbar sequence has these two or three major issues always going on with it. The first one is the issue of food and water, and specifically water, because food is probably easier to put together, to save. If they have any animals, they can eat them, and so on. But water is literally the thing that the desert is known for not having. And if you're in the desert, you obviously don't always have water. Second thing is the discussion that we had yesterday about complaints, what's framed here often as not having trust, as testing Hashem, testing Moshe. Of course, the complaints are about the water, but it seems to be a separate thing, because as I said, it probably would have been legitimate to ask for water, but the kind of complaining and this sort of attitude that we see here is seen as a problem. And the third problem, which is maybe not necessarily a problem of the Midbar, but it's obviously a problem of, if you think of the story of the Midbar in a more broad sense, which is really the military march from Mitzrayim, from Egypt to Canaan. That's the story of the Midbar, taking the most broadly. Of course, yes, Mitzrayim is a kind of war. They went out of Mitzrayim, they had Kriyas Yam Suf, which is a kind of battle, and then going to Eretz Yisrael, which is going to be a war with the Canaanim, and of course, there might be some people in between. There are obviously also some tribes who have some dominion, some control over the desert. It's not like they went into no man's land, although in some sense the desert might have been some kind of no man's land. But as we see also, throughout the stories, especially later when we get sort of to the other side of the desert, so to speak, which is closer to Eretz Canaan, we get into all kinds of fights with Midian, with Sichon and Og and so on. And Amalek seems to belong to that kind of part of thing. In other words, whether Amalek is a kind of tribe that was part of the desert closer to Mitzrayim, as is the impression that you might have gotten from this story, from the place where it is, or really Amalek is a tribe that was in the desert closer to Israel, closer to Eretz Canaan, which is the impression you will get probably from stories of Amalek showing up later in Tanakh, and when we're already in Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael. And or maybe there's a kind of nomad Bedouin tribe who travels around, so, well, you know, have some kind of control over the desert, but also raiding tribe who raids sometimes into where people live. However, you see that it belongs to that part of the aspect of difficulty of going into the Midbar, and specifically the difficulty where they have to conquer or they have to survive in a war sense. And I think it's important because, as we'll see, this is like the first story of a war, an explicit story of a war that Moshe and Yeshua have. And of course, this is probably a paradigm for all the wars that Yeshua especially, but also Moshe and the stories of Sefer Midbar, will lead with other nations or other tribes. So let's first discuss in more detail the story of Refidim. So the story starts with the formula of Vayisu Vayachnu. This is a formula that we have the most formulaic expression of it in the famous list of 41 or 42 Masois in Parshas Masai. And here we have something of it. And all along these stories of the Midbar, there's these sort of signposts, these sort of psukim that give you where they went from and where they went to. And it's literally in the same language, Vayisu Vayachnu. Of course, here there's some more words, and there's probably a meaning in why there's more words. But in any case, they gone from Midbar Sin, which is where the previous stories happened, to Refidim, which is where they are now. And then it adds, these two things that it adds here is Kol Adas Bnei Yisrael. And there's probably a meaning for what this means. Adas Bnei Yisrael versus when it just says Vayisu, or when it just says Yisrael, or Kol Ha'eda. These are specific terms that have some meaning, but I can't get into this now. Second thing that it adds here is L'mas'em al pi Hashem. This is, of course, something that we have the long version of also in Parshas Bahaloyscha. Well, there's like five psukim that describe how they went al pi Hashem, what that means, whether it was with the Onan, with the cloud that led them, or whether through some kind of prophecy, some kind of thing that Aaron and Moshe showed them, and so on. That's an important emphasis here, and it seems to be important because, again, you'll remember that the framing of these complaints, in other words, the framing that Moshe gives to all the complaints, is that they are not al pi Hashem. You don't believe that Hashem is here. So the pasuk specifically here says that it is al pi Hashem. It's al pi Hashem. It's not Moshe himself deciding to travel around. It's al pi Hashem. Okay, so we start with the fight, and it's important, I think, to have the language. There's two words, and later we'll see. There's the place is called, in the end of the story, like many stories we've discussed, finish with the name of a place. And the name of the place is Massa Umariva. Massa Umariva. And these are the two words which we hear all along the stories of the desert. Meriva, which means literally like a fight or an argument, is the first thing it says. It says, Vayoreva Amin Moshe. They fight with him. They said, give us water. And Moshe says, answers to this, Matriva Nimodi. Why are you fighting with him? Matan Nasan Es Hashem. This is the second verb. And then that's why the place is called Meriva. They're fighting. And Menasa, Masa, they're testing or however exactly we'll translate the word nisoyan to discussed. Then we really have a third verb, which isn't in the name, but the third verb is teluna, vayolun aman Moshe. So they're thirsty. First we have like a little story where they fight and Moshe answers them. Then they're thirsty and they complain on Moshe, they complain against Moshe, and they say this complaint that we have repeating in this all these stories, why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? Just to kill me, my children, and my animals in thirst. So that's the fight, that's the Maso Meriva. And then what does Moshe do? As he does more explicitly two stories ago and here again explicitly, he goes to Hashem and Vayitzak Moshe Hashem, as I explained, he complains to Hashem and he says like this, and here's a new kind of complaint. He says, Mo'esel amazeh oid ma'atos kuluni. What should I do with these people? I'll live a little more and they will stone me. This is Moshe already fearing for his leadership. They're saying they're really, really challenging his right to be the leader. They're saying, why did you take us out of Egypt? And Moshe seems to have gotten scared. We know that Skila is kind of the mob justice that we find several times in Tanakh. That's what happens when the people sort of mutiny against their leader. They might stone him. And he seems to think that this is really what's going to happen. And really, Moshe, when he goes back to Hashem, he's really saying, I believe that it's you that sent me here. But like we had, for example, in the end of Parshas Shemos, but look, you put me in danger and you're not actually providing water. And what should I do? And therefore Hashem answers not only the people, but also Moshe. And of course, this has to do with the second version or the second occurrence of this story where it's explicitly said to be a sin of Moshe also for not having enough trust. But I think that even over here, we could see that there's something where Moshe himself is really becomes part of the complaint, becomes part of the fight, because Vayitzak Moshe al Hashem always means that includes some kind of complaint that he has against Hashem, where he's saying something like, why did you send me to these hard-necked people? What should I do with them? And therefore Hashem answers not only to Moshe to answer the people, but he also answers Moshe what to do. Yemer Hashem and Moshe, go, Avolefneim, go pass by in front of the people. This is a military language. Avolefneim, in other words, you're the leader, so you have to pass by in front of them. In other words, you know how to lead them, I'm telling you how to lead them. Take along Mizik and Israel from the elders. And we find that throughout these stories, there are these elders, the tribal elders, who are really the leaders of the people. They're the ones who the main leader, like Moshe, has to really convince that he's the leader. Take them along, like we had in the story of Paro, you took them along. And take along the stick with which you have hit the water in Egypt. Remember the story of the Makkos, this is really the stick that he received in the snare the first time. Moshe's magic staff, take it along and you will go. I will be there for you in front, I will be standing in front of you on the rack in Chorev. And Chorev obviously is in Refidim or next to Refidim. You will hit the rack and water will come out and the people will drink. So this is basically Hashem telling Moshe in a very similar way to how we had in Mitzrayim. Moshe complains to Hashem, why did you send me? And Hashem gives him the stick and gives him the power to create some kind of miracles to provide to the people. And he says, you will go and I will be there for you. It seems meaning to say I will help you, or maybe I'm showing you that I'm there. Maybe the people will see that I'm there in some sense. And you will get them water out of the rack. And that's what he does. La'en ezek nesrol, and the elders see, and he succeeds. And that's the end of the story. We only end with a postscript note, which says that the place was called Massa Meriva because the Riv and the Massa. And the pasuk here, it finally says, and this is, I think, the most explicit pasuk to explain what this test was or what this riv was, why we call this testing Hashem or not trusting Hashem, because they said, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu ayin. They were doubting. They were saying, is Hashem with us? Is he between us? Is he with us or is he not? And this is the thing that it bothers Hashem the most. This is what the pasuk is bothered by in all these stories of nesiones, of testing, asura nesiones, nisav, sinus, hakadosh baruch b'amidbar. This is what the testing consists of. Okay, so that's enough for this story. Now, the second story is, again, the second story that happened in Rephidim, is Amalek. Of course, it doesn't say here who Amalek is. We do remember that Amalek was one of the grandchildren, one of the Alufim of Esav and Parshas Vayishlach. So it was mentioned. It's actually even mentioned before then, in Parshas Lech Lecha, by the war, it says, Ve'akos kol shtei Amaleki. So maybe there were even some tribe called Amalek even before, who Esav connected to or something. But in any case, there's Amalek, and he fights with the, and he creates war with them in Rephidim. So they're threatened. This is the first time after Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we could say between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan, where someone starts a war against them. Of course, they in some sense started the war against Paria and went out, but here Amalek fights with them. And here we don't have Hashem talking to Moshe and part of the story at all, only after the story. And we have to, something that I think people don't usually realize in the story of Amalek, but it seems to me to be obvious, which is that this was a kind of failure. So just like there's the failure of Moshe, at least in the beginning of all the stories of the water, he's not providing water for the people, he's not providing food for them, and so on, and he succeeds. Here there's obviously a failure. They were not supposed to be attacked. Amalek attacked them. And also it seems like it wasn't simple to get overcome this attack. He didn't even entirely win. He weakened Amalek somehow, as he says, but it did not win. He didn't conquer Amalek. Amalek is still a threat. So this is probably the first and in some sense the last major challenge that Moshe had, which he did not accomplish. And he gets a promise in the end of the story that it will be accomplished in the end. And this is the big story of Amalek. Let me go in order and start here. So instead of Moshe going to Hashem, Moshe seems to know what to do. It seems like in cases of war and these kind of things, Moshe already was used to. He knew how to act in relative to war. It's not something that he goes to complain. It's not something that people are complaining about what he's doing. He tells Yeshua, and Yeshua, this is the first time Yeshua is mentioned. So also interesting, he gets no introduction. This is his introduction. Of course, he has some kind of introductions later. This is Yeshua's introduction. This is what we know, what Yeshua was. He was Moshe's general. And Moshe tells Yeshua, choose for us people. This is interesting language. B'chalo ne'anoshim. We have, Parpare had rechev bachur, chosen charioteers or chosen chariots. So obviously, choosing means find people suitable for this battle. So people strong enough and capable enough to fight. And go fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the head of the Giva, the hill. This hill might be also itself, the Tzur Bechorev, which he was before. So there's like hills around here or mountains. And I will stand there with the Mata Elohim, which the Mata. So in some sense, it seems like Moshe already knows what to do. So before he didn't know what to do, and Hashem told him, go with your stick to the mountain or to the rock. And here he already knows, this is what I'm doing. This is how I do my things. I take the stick and I go on the rock and I will be helping you from there. But it's Yeshua's job to actually do the actual fighting. So similar to how like Moshe did just the stick things in the Makkas and then Hashem did the actual Makkas. Here Yeshua is doing the actual fighting and Moshe, his job is just to stand there with a stick. And Yeshua follows him, follows his command. He does as Moshe said. And Moshe, and now we have two more people, Aharon, which you already know, and Hur, another person, which is not introduced here. We might find out later who he is. Goes up to this head of the hill of the Giv'a. And the pasuk describes a very interesting result. So basically, we assume that tomorrow morning, they counterattack. Yeshua counterattacks Amalek. And Moshe sort of orchestrates the battle from his position on the top of the hill or the mountain as he raises his hand. Yisrael wins. As he puts down his hand, Amalek wins. And this seems to be a problem. Because of course, like you would expect, the story of Tanakh is that Hashem helped the Yidden and the Yisrael always won. But they didn't always win. In some sense, they won. Sometimes, so there was a hard battle. And besides for it being hard, of course, Yeshua was having a hard time. He wasn't entirely managing to win the battle with Amalek. Moshe was also having a hard time because it seems to me it's hard to hold up your hands and do whatever it is that he had to do, which caused the battle to be won by them. And Vedei Moshe Kvedim, his hands are heavy. We're supposed to understand that he's older already here. I mean, this is right after Yetzias Mitzrayim, he's not really older than then, but he's having a hardship for some reason. So therefore, they take, so you can't stand. You can't even stand. So they, meaning Gahar and Vechur, take a rack, put it under him. Interesting. We had a tzur and an eva now. Also, the rack seems to be doing something here. He sits on it. And besides for sitting down, so he can't really stand, he sits. Ahar and Achur are holding up his hands, each on one side. So we imagine Ahar on one side, Achur on the other side. And he holds up his hands steadfast. Emuna ad be Hashemesh, until the evening, until the sun sets. So he manages to sort of keep his hands up, which is what keeps the Yisrael side from winning the war, winning the battle, all the way throughout until the evening, which was when battles naturally end. And we have the result of the battle is Vayachlish Yeshua, Samalek Ves Amalek. For Yeshua did weaken Amalek and his people by the mouth of his word. In other words, he killed some of them, but obviously Vayachlish doesn't mean he won. And this is not said explicitly, but we see obviously from the next part that Yeshua did not win Amalek. He made them weaker. They maybe went away for today, but they're going to be back. And therefore, now is the first time Hashem speaks in this story. And Hashem tells the Moshe like this, write this down in a book. So this is also one of the interesting and important places where Moshe is commanded to write something. We, of course, ascribe the whole book or the whole Chumash, it's called Teiras Moshe, as if Moshe wrote it. But internal to the Chumash, we see several times that there is a story where Moshe wrote something. However, we understand this relative to the general theory that Moshe wrote the whole thing, but the point is there's something here at this stage of the story he has to write down, and not only write down, v'sim baznisha, which means speak it. So we show there's also both a writing and an oral memory, saying, remember this? Remember that I will erase the memory of Amalek from under the heaven. Under the heaven just means from everywhere. That's how the Tanakh calls the world, this world, like later Aristotle would call it like the sublunar world. It's the tachzashmaim, under the heaven. And in other words, it's what didn't happen now, but this is a promise. And I think this is why there's the big story of the promise of like Melchemes Amalek is based on the failure of Moshe to actually conquer Amalek. And there's like this promise written down and retold for Yeshua that he will be Melech Amalek. Okay, and then, like as in many stories, we have also a kind of naming to end the story. And also, as we had in many stories in Sefer Bereshis, a kind of sanctification of a place or a mizbeach. So Moshe builds a mizbeach. Of course, this is very interesting because later, of course, in the third part of Sefer Shemos, we have the long story of the Mishkan with the mizbeach that Moshe built. But here, there's some kind of separate mizbeach in this place. We assume that if you go to Rephidim, to the mountain, you'll see a mizbeach of Moshe. And the mizbeach has a name, and the name is called Havai Nisi, Hashem Nisi. This is, as we see in Sefer Bereshis, it was accepted, was okay, normal to call a mizbeach, a holy place, in the name of the God towards it's dedicated to, and also in the aspect of the God that he's helped him. So Hashem Nisi, Hashem is my, again, what the word Nis means, my miracle. I don't think it means miracle. I think it means something like my high thing, my flag, my helper, something like that. And in other words, this is dedicated to how Hashem helped them at this moment. Vayomer, and he says, who says, either Hashem or Moshe, ki yod al kesyon, l'chomo l'Hashem b'amalek medardo. So there's some kind of, not a clear pasuk what it means. It seems like a fragment of some poetry or something like that, like epic poetry of the stories of the wars. But the second part of it is clear. It says there's a war. Hashem has a war with Amalek. Medardo means some lidardar, for the next four generations, like we discussed, since it wasn't one in the first time, so there's like a continuing promise that Hashem will fight for us with Amalek, and therefore the people understood the first half of the sentence to be something like a language of swearing, like he's swearing with his hand by his kesya, by his chair, or maybe it means to say this mizbeach is a kesya, like kisei Hashem, like the Mikdash is kisei Hashem. However we understand it, that's the end of these stories.